This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good night and welcome to the doctors. Now I'm getting a lot of feedback. Hello, good night and welcome. Is everything okay, producer? I'm getting a lot of feedback. Hello, good night, and welcome to the Doctor's Inn with me, Dr. Dinotra Artakar. I'm still getting a lot of feedback, so if I hope everyone's hearing me okay, but I'm hearing myself very loudly. So welcome to the show on Guardian Radio 96.9. You can listen to us on Guardian Radio, as well as guardiantalkradio.com. And of course, we're live on Facebook. The Doctor is In with me, Dr. Dinotra Archer Cartwright. And so we, of course, brought to you tonight by Medical Concierge Services for all your medical health care needs. We are a medical concierge service. We do come to you wherever you are, your home, your office, your boat. But we all make it so you can see us. We are in the Bahamas Heart Center, and we take care of everyone, children to adults, and all your general health care needs are available. You can reach us at 326-1521. You can also reach us on our new WhatsApp line, 432-4010. And it's a great way if you want to sign up for NHI, you can just send us a WhatsApp. You want to sign up, we will take your information from you and we will help you to get that all done. So give us a call, 326-1521, or our WhatsApp line, 432-4010. So I'm glad to be with you again on a Tuesday evening. I hope everyone's having a lovely evening. These days are going fast. We are already in the month of February, so the year has really begun. Lots of things are happening, but we're going to focus on health tonight, of course. We're going to open up the phone lines. We're going to make it an open line tonight, but we're also going to talk about a topic along the way. So phone lines tonight is 322-6232, 325-4316, or 325-4259. We are also live on Facebook, The Doctor's In with me, Dr. D. So if you have questions, you can also send them on to our chat there, because we're not doing the text line tonight. And you can call in, so we have an open line. So if you have other questions outside of our topic, that's fine. We can address them as well. But tonight we're going to talk about constipation. Are you regular? And it's something that's really, really common. We see it. Over 2.5 million people in the United States suffer from constipation, and it can be both what we call acute and chronic. So some people occasionally are constipated, and then some people have a chronic. Really, what does it mean to be constipated? What does it mean to not be regular, as we would say? And we look at the whole idea of more chronic constipation, which is an infrequency of having a bowel movement or having difficulty passing stool for several weeks or longer. And usually about 3 months, if that is very consistent, you'd be considered to be chronically constipated. And it's generally described as having fewer than 3 bowel movements in a week. So when we think about normal, there's kind of a normal for each person, but in general, you expect a normal adult human to pass about 3 times a week. And some people say as many times as 3 times a day. You have a lot of people that after every meal, they would go to the bathroom and they would have a normal pass. And so, question just now, where did that pop up from? But I guess it's going to come up to me in a second. But this is what we consider normal. I saw the question pop up. I'm not sure where that came from. Oh, there it is. Okay, we got a question, it looks like, from Facebook. Where'd it go? I'm going to have to look for it. So I'll come back to that. But I think I did see a question pop up on Facebook. But yes, that's really what it is to be normal as an adult. And though occasionally people get constipated, it's really, really common. Some people do experience what we call a more chronic sense of constipation. And this can interfere with their ability to do their daily tasks. And that's when it really becomes a problem. So chronic constipation can lead to straining excessively in order to have a normal bowel movement. And that's when it tends to be problematic. Treatment for chronic constipation really is dependent on what the cause is. So it's really important for us to find out what the underlying issue may be. And there are various different causes that might lead to it. But what are some of the signs and the symptoms that you may be suffering from more of a chronic constipation and not just an acute issue? Well, first of all, we like to look at what your regular, what regular is for you, and compare that to what regular that we think about. So that's about 3 times a week. And then if you're having fewer passes than 3 stools a week, then we know that you possibly have constipation. Also, if the stool consistency is hard or very lumpy, then that may also be a sign. If you are straining constantly to use the bathroom, you know, it's just not that you feel like you have to go and then it comes out easily. That's also a feeling that there is a blockage inside the rectum. It just feels like there's something there that may be making it difficult or preventing you from passing stool normally. Also, if you feel that you can't get completely empty, there always feels like there's something else that you're missing and you need to go back. And if you need help emptying the rectum in any way, if you need to apply any pressure or you need to have an evacuation, these are all signs that if you've experienced 2 or more of these, then it's likely that you're suffering from constipation and you want to speak with your doctor about that. There are really a lot of different causes that can cause you to have a chronic constipation. Constipation most commonly occurs when the waste or stool moves too slowly through the digestive tract. And there's a lot of things that may cause that, but what that causes that it's more effective in removing fluid or water from the waste in our body. And this becomes very dry and hard and makes it difficult to pass through. And this is what causes the possible problems with constipation. And so this can be caused by a various amount of things, such as blockages in the colon or the rectum. So that can cause the waste to move very slowly. And this can be caused because of small tears that might be around the anus caused by anal fissures, as well as any blockages in the intestines itself. And this bowel obstruction can lead to what you see as constipation and may be actually a sign of something else that's going on inside of the body. We have to look at colon cancer or any form of colon or rectal cancer, anything that will cause narrowing, such as strictures in the bowel, and anything that would cause pressure on the walls of the intestine, such as some type of outpouching from another organ, such as a rectocele or something from other organs that may be in the area for women, it may be vaginally related. So those things can all cause some form of blockage in the colon or the rectum. There are also problems related to the nerves around the colon and the rectum. And if you have any trauma or damage or nerve damage in that area, it can lead to autonomic, what we call neuropathy, which means the nerves that are innervating the bowel may not be working properly, and it may be difficult for waste and stool to pass through the bowel. Diseases such as multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, neurological problems that would cause constipation. You have to also consider spinal cord injuries, and as well as patients who have strokes, because that means that there was a problem in the brain which may relay to that area of the body and cause some dysfunction. Some people with chronic constipation, it may involve the musculature in that area, and the muscles in that area is what is involved with the elimination process. And so the inability to relax the pelvic muscles or allow bowel movements can cause constipation as well. And if you have the pelvic muscles that are not coordinated or relaxed appropriately, then that could be it too. And if you have any condition that would cause a weakening in the muscles in the pelvic area, can also lead to problems with elimination over time and lead to constipation. The other category of conditions involve the hormones of the body. And so if you have different diseases that affect your hormonal state, you can also have changes in your bowel pattern and movements. And so diseases like diabetes, diabetes is everywhere. And you only think about, strokes and heart attacks and those types of things, but diabetes it's really an endocrine disease. So there are some hormonal effects related as well. So diabetes, anyone with an overactive parathyroid, such as a hyperparathyroidism, those are the little parathyroid glands that you have. If they have a problem, then they're overactive. They can also lead to constipation. Pregnancy, the state of pregnancy, women tend to be constipated, and for various reasons, not only just hormonally, but even the uterus is expanding. So that's more pressure on that area. So you find that women tend to battle with chronic constipation. And then hypothyroidism, which is the thyroid itself not working as it should, being underactive and not producing enough of the thyroid hormones, can also lead to a state of chronic constipation. There are various risk factors that we look at for persons which would cause you to not be what we call regular. And we find that it happens more often in our older adult population. So as you get older, issues with constipation seem to be more likely. Being a woman is a risk factor. So women more inclined than men to be constipated, and then being dehydrated, which is I'm finding more and more people out there that do not drink enough fluids and don't drink enough water. So recently I was speaking, he goes days without drinking water, and that state of dehydration leads to so many different issues, including being kind of chronically constipated, because you really do need that fluid to get your waste moving through the body adequately. So being hydrated can lead simply to having a chronic state of constipation. Getting no or little physical activity, because physical activity is really great for bowel movement. And so if you're not very active, this may be one of the things that are putting you at risk of being constipated. Certain medications, of course. So we look at all the medications people may be taking. And this may be something where you started a medication and you realized since you started the medication that you've been having this problem. And this is more likely to happen with medications that are sedatives, opioid-like medications, antidepressants, and some of the medications lower blood pressure. So if you're having those issues, it's great to have that conversation with your physician, because that may be the cause of it, of course. There are states of mind as well that we look at where we find that there is more often to be constipation, and that are persons with mental health issues such as depression, or if they have some form of eating disorder. So we kind of look out for those things for people who are having those types of disorders and ask you about it when, you know, if you come in. So those things are all really, really related. Now, constipation can be, as we talked about, acute or chronic, but of course, there can be some complications that are related to it. And so it's not a good idea to just, if you're seeing this happening weeks or months over time, to just kind of let it go, let it go, let it go. So you can have what people know as sweater hemorrhoids. These little outpouchings can be very painful for some people. They can be itchy. They can be just very uncomfortable. And they usually come about if you're having to strain, to pass a bowel movement. And this is because the veins and the vessels in that area become quite swollen, and you end up with these little outpouchings that can be very uncomfortable. Now, sometimes you're able to move those by just simply removing the problem or whatever, or you know, getting the person to change their lifestyle and not be constipated over time. It can be treated with medication, but sometimes these outpouchings or hemorrhoids can actually end up having to be surgically removed. So there are some complications to constipation that aren't just, you know, the discomfort of it all. Also, some people can get tears or fissure, and that can be quite painful over time. And so constant straining can cause this. And then this really causes there to be a cycle of constipation that happens after the fact, in which you are now dealing with the fissures and the pain and passing stool, and it can be a really bad cycle of events. Also, you can have what we call fecal impaction, where it is almost impossible by yourself to be able to have that bowel movement, and that chronic constipation can cause this accumulation to really harden and become a serious problem in which you would need assistance in getting that evacuated. And so impactions are sometimes more frequent than you think, starting out in pediatrics. Of course, we would see them sometimes with young children or babies at times as well, especially if they become dehydrated or simply because adjustments to eating habits and what the families are feeding them. So if your children as well are having constipation, you know, you really want to look at the diet and what you're kind of doing with the child, and if they're getting adequate hydration. And that usually is a part of the problem, unless there is some type of physical obstruction going on. Also, you can have types of prolapse, such as a rectal prolapse, where there is actually a protrusion or an outpouching of the rectal area. And this is due to a lot of straining, and this causes that to stretch out quite a bit. And that can be very uncomfortable and even be seen coming out of the rectum. And so therefore you want to not strain. And so how do a lot of this from happening? And we're gonna talk also a little bit about some of those high fiber foods that are helpful with it. But just in terms of a general idea of prevention, you wanna include lots of high fiber foods into your diet. And this would include beans, vegetables, fruits, whole grain cereals, and bran. So having those foods incorporated into your regular diet will help you to definitely be a lot more regular. You want to eat fewer foods with low amounts of fiber. So you want to rid yourself of processed foods and dairy. And if you're eating a lot of meat, you might want to cut down. Drinking lots and lots of fluids, as we suggested, is going to be super, super important. And then, of course, you want to be as active as possible and get your regular exercise. The theme of most of the things in the show, there is a common thread of what really makes you healthy, what helps you. So all of these diseases, whether acute or chronic, are usually all related a lot to our lifestyle and the things that we're doing and what we're putting into our body. You want to manage your stress as well as possible. This is very preventative for constipation. And also, you don't want to ignore when you have the urge to actually pass. So that can be something that also causes constipation. If you're busy during the day and you say you're going to hold it and wait for another time, eventually your body stops reacting to that urge. And so you can lead to actually creating a state of constipation for yourself. So you don't want to ignore what you're feeling inside of your body. You also want to try to create a regular schedule for your bowel movements, especially after meals. And so if you regularly start, you know, going to the bathroom, if you get a pass, this might be the best time when there's a lot of bowel movement going on to actually get that going without having to strain or pass stool or letting it linger in the intestines for a really, really long period of time. You want to make sure your children who begin to eat solid foods get a lot of fiber in their diet. So introducing fiber really early to a kid's diet is going to be something that's really important, because it's harder as they get older to really get them to eat the fiber the way that you want to. So if you can introduce those foods really early on in your child's life, then it will make your life a lot easier. So get them to eat the beans, get them to eat the lentils, try them on the vegetables and the fresh fruit. Now, when we want to diagnose this, we definitely have to do a physical exam. It may require having a digital rectal exam as well, and there may be that needs to be done. In terms of testing, you may have various blood tests that your doctor would need you to do. We talked about thyroid disease, so you would want to look out to make sure that you're not hyperthyroid. So we would do thyroid disease testing. We would look at your calcium levels as well, and see if there was anything in the blood that we could really find out. Checking for diabetes, of course, as we discussed. If you really are having really bad chronic constipation, you may be required to get an x-ray, especially if you end up in the emergency room. And they're looking to see if what's present there, if there's something that's really gross abnormality, or if that is what we call stool in the bowel. And so you may end up having to get an x-ray to see how that is done. Sometimes you have to go further by actually doing a type of scope. So they would look into the bowel, either to see if there is anything that may be blocking the rectum or the lower part of the colon in order to stop the passage. Also, evaluation of the sphincter itself to make sure, as we talked about the anal fissures, you want to get an evaluation of the muscles in that area, and as well an evaluation of how well food would move through the body. And we call that the colonic transit study, and it can be done using various x-rays via a progressive capsule through the colon, and this can be recorded over 24 to 48 hours. Now, we don't usually have all of that technology in the Bahamas, but we do usually have some of it. All right. And so if all fails, some people do even require to have an MRI done. And then based on things are, we would look at how to treat the patient. So if you're having those problems, you know, those are some of the things that you might have to go through if you go to the doctor, or it may be a very simple case of identifying some nutritional issues that you might have. And so the treatment for chronic constipation usually begins with your diet and your lifestyle. And usually we have to look at what you're doing and how do we make that change, and whether we need to remove that impaction of stool right away, or if it's something that you can do over time, just changing the way that you eat and the things that you do. And so we talked about a little bit about increasing your fiber intake and adding fiber to your diet to increase the weight of your stool and then such, creating an increased speed of passage through your intestines. By doing this, slowly beginning to eat vegetables each day, and by choosing to have whole grains and cereals in your diet, you can eventually get a smoother transition, which will relieve you of constipation. It's usually recommended that there's a specific amount of fiber or grams of fiber you want to consume. And the aim is to have about 14 grams of fiber for every 1,000 calories in your diet. So a sudden increase in the amount of fiber you can eat causes bloating and gas. So you want to start slowly and you want to work your way up. So if you weren't eating anything at all, you just want to slowly add things to your diet that are going to be high in fiber and that are going to help you to have a better transition. You want to exercise most days because the physical activity really increases the muscle activity in your intestines. And exercising and trying to keep fit most days, you'll be able to do this a lot easier. So those things kind of go hand in hand in terms of exercises and changing your diet. And so you want to talk to your doctor and kind of find out what is the best health plan for you and what would be the best exercise activity. And you don't want to ignore the urge to have that bowel movement. So retraining your bowel to be more responsive to what's going on inside of you, and to take your time in the bathroom and allow yourself to have enough time and not to strain really, and don't feel rushed. So you want to really make that experience something that's really calming and soothing, and rather than something that's going to make you really anxious and, just make that experience worse. And especially within small children, we talk about this a lot when we talk about potty training and not making that experience really something that's uncomfortable and create problems when going to the bathroom later in life. We're also going to talk a little bit about some of the things like laxatives that help to give you a good transition before we take our break. So there's several types. There's several types that we look at, and each one of them work very differently. And we talk about fiber supplementation, which help to add some bulk. So if you're not getting the fiber you need, or it's difficult for you to get the fiber you need from the food, sometimes we will say to do like a fiber supplement. And a lot of you would have heard about things like Metamucil, and citrusol, and these are bulk, they add bulk and softness and allow the stool to pass softly and more freely. And these can be quite helpful if you cannot get the natural fiber in your diet. There's also stimulants, which will be more like your Dulcis for persons who really need that instant relief. There are osmotics that move through the colon by increasing the secretion of fluids in the intestine and to stimulate bowel movements. And that would be more like your oral magnesium, your Phillips milk of magnesia, those types of things, your Glycolax, those types of things that you would see. And then, of course, you have your lubricants like your mineral oils and your enemas that move through the colon, make it easier for things to move through the colon. You've got your stool softeners, which are like your Colace. Some of you might have used things like Colace if you had an endoscopy or some type of procedure where they had to look through the bowel with a camera or colonoscopy and where they needed to clear everything out. Enemas and suppositories, different ones are used, glycerin by Sacadol's suppositories also aid in moving the stool out of the body, providing lubrication and other stimulation. And what I would say about using any type of medication or laxatives, it's not a good idea to make it something that's something you do often. With most of our patients, we do encourage really lifestyle changes. And using any type of laxatives is only a very short-term measure, because people do sometimes become very used to them, and they can train their bowel to actually not pass without using a laxative. So you don't want that to be your crutch. So if you're using a lot of them yourself without going to the doctor, you may want to go out, get that checked to make sure that that's not something else that's going in. There are some other medications that we don't use as often, and those will be prescribed. Also, what you have is you can train your pelvic muscles. Like we talked about, biofeedback training involves working with a therapist and uses different devices to help you to relax and tighten the muscles as you need it. By relaxing your pelvic floor muscles at the right time during medication, you can help the pass through more easily. And during biofeedback sessions, especially, you can do that as well. Some causes, of course, we said may actually, if you have any kind of blockage or rectocele or strictures, some people may actually opt to have some surgery done. And some of the main things are going on. So we're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit more about high fiber foods that are going to help to relieve you of some of these issues. So we'll take a break and we'll be right back on The Doctor's In with me, Dr. D. Archer.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Hello, welcome back to The Doctor's In with me, Dr. Dinothra Archer Cartwright. Thank you for joining us tonight on Guardian Radio every Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. We are also live on Facebook, The Doctor's In with me, Dr. D, so you can check us out there. We've got an open line tonight if you want to jump in, if you have any questions or you want to talk about something else. 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. So as you've noticed, we're at a different time. We are now only at 6:30. 6:30 to 7:30 is our show and not 7:30 anymore. For those of you who are wondering or just catching in with us for the first time for the new year, we officially started last year at 6:30 p.m. So the conversation tonight, we were talking about constipation and how having fewer than three bowel movements per week is considered to be constipation, or if you're having frequently hard stools, and this is happening over weeks, 3 months period of time, we can call this a chronic. We talked about the various reasons why you may have constipation and some of the things that you could do to help. And so I want to talk a little bit as well about some of the high fiber foods that you should be eating, which is really the first place to start when you want to treat an issue like constipation, is to look at the diet. So you want to really look at out there at what are the high fiber foods. So a lot of people ask me, Dr. Archer, what are the high fiber foods? So we're not always sure which foods are high in fiber, which not. So we're going to look at the 22 foods with the most fiber and how you can really kind of bring those into your regular diet, which is super, super important. And this can help to alleviate all those complications such as hemorrhoids and fissures and different things that are caused by constipation. So once you've found out what's causing the problem and if it's just nutritional, these are some of the things that you can do after eyes and increasing your fluid or water intake. So a cup of beans can provide one third, if not more, of the fiber you need each day. Other high fiber foods try to include berries, fishes, vegetables, oats, chia seeds, and dark chocolate. So fiber is really incredibly important, and it leaves your stomach pretty much undigested. And that's a really good thing about fiber, is it doesn't really fully digest into our bodies. So it ends up in our colon, where it feeds our really good bacteria and leads to various health benefits. So not just constipation, but fiber is really great for our bowel health. And what we find is that a lot of diseases start with our bowel or our gut health, and inflammation can start right there. And that high fiber in your diet really is a good start to all of your healthy choices in life. So certain types of fiber may also promote weight loss, lower your blood sugar levels, and of course, as we talked about, fight constipation, right? So the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics recommends consuming about 14 grams for every 1,000 calories you consume. And this translates to 24 grams of fiber for women and about 38 grams of fiber for our men. Unfortunately, an estimated 95% of American adults and children do not meet their daily requirements for fiber intake. And in America, the average daily intake is estimated only 16.2 grams. So we tend to have a very similar diet to the Americans, sadly, which is not a good thing. They're really not the ones to follow. But I'm assuming that there is a similar profile here in the Bahamas, and that's why we have a lot of problems with constipation, because as you can see, those numbers fall short from the recommended daily amount of fiber that you need. And so fortunately, increasing your fiber takes is really, really easy, and it's simple to integrate these foods into your diet. So what exactly is fiber? Fiber is a blanket term for a type of carbohydrate that your body can't digest. And the fact that your body doesn't use fiber for fuel doesn't make it less valuable to our body. It actually plays a really, really important role in our digestion. So dietary fiber can offer benefits in a variety of different ways. Fiber is really great in reducing your cholesterol. So fiber's presence in the digestive tract can help to reduce the body's cholesterol. So if you are fighting cholesterol, this is a really good way to naturally bump up or help to actually remove cholesterol from your body, because what happens with fiber is we don't absorb the cholesterol really well as much. This is really, really true, especially if you're already on medications for cholesterol. That medication lowers cholesterol, and you use fiber supplements as an adjunct to that, works really, really great. It promotes a healthy weight because high fiber foods like fruits and vegetables tend to be lower in calories. So it's a great type of carbohydrates to add to your diet, because a lot of that won't add to your caloric intake. Fiber's presence can slow digestion in the stomach to help you feel fuller for a longer period of time. So adding bulk to the digestive tract, and that's what we're talking about in terms of constipation. Those who struggle with any sluggish digestion may want to add fiber to their diet, and fiber naturally adds bulk to their digestive tract as your body doesn't digest it. So it allows you to kind of stimulate the intestines itself. So it's really great in doing that. So fiber is super important for you. Promoting blood sugar control, it can take your body longer to break down high fiber foods. So this helps to maintain more consistent blood sugar levels, which is especially helpful with our diabetics. So if you're looking for ways to control your diabetes, switch out those carbs for foods that are high in fiber, and you'll have a more stable sugar level in your body. And really with diabetes, it's those spikes of sugar, the high levels of sugar, which lead to a lot of complications. So fiber is really great for that. Fiber reduces your chances of cancers. So by eating enough fiber, you can have protective effects against certain cancers such as colon cancer. There are many reasons for this, including the types of fiber such as the pectin, which is found in apples, may also have antioxidant properties. So there's really, really a lot of stuff. Okay, caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, good night, doctor. How are you doing?
Hi, good. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm enjoying the show. I listened last week and the week before. So what happened is now, I just called you to tell you they're trying to bury your brethren because...
What happened?
You know, the dates they gave me for this hernia surgery, right? Mm. They have to try and facilitate that much quicker. But, you know, this is a timely topic because, you know, obviously with the hernia, I can't afford to be straining at bowel movement,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it would catalyze the, I mean, cost it a bit too, but protrude more.
Yes.
You know, and I realize it's getting bigger, but you know, in exercising and injuring yourself, it kind of almost sank me into depression, right? But then I look at my little man. But the thing is, Dr. D, I'm well knowledgeable about this fiber thing, so I was like, wow, you know, I can't afford. You know, I glad you mentioned retraining the bowel because I had to retrain my bladder after. I had two TERPs, so I know what that is, you see?
Oh, okay.
And, of course, I have a lot of beans and legumes, and I'm on a 75% raw food diet and just one cooked meal a day because I'm afraid that, you know, I can't afford, I have to try to facilitate this until they can facilitate me because they look at it trying to refer me straight to the grave, you see?
Oh,
and
boy.
It's really ridiculous. And so as far as the bowel movements, I can't believe that some people would satisfy with 3 times a week. All right, because, I mean, you know, a lot of foods that I eat, I try to incorporate those which have the soluble and insoluble fiber, like the bananas and the avocados, and I try to get, you know, my little daughter to get into that. I'm not even satisfied with her one bowel movement. And so, I know, because little children, they always, you have to train them with teeth, and they worry about how things taste and, that it's so hard to get them. This new modern paradigm that they have created, it's like junk food filling up the place and good food goes to waste. And it's hard to get children. I have to actually, you know, I mean, my daughter like a lot of stuff that I eat. But, you know, I have to obviously, like, I buy the walnuts and the pecans. Sometimes the pistachios are a little too expensive, according to where I move it, sometimes moving up and down. But I try to get
they're like
these.
$20 a bag these days.
Yeah, you know, but the thing is, I always try to give her food something. And I try to eat foods, and so I get the blender. I'm not even giving my, you know, seeing that information was circulating, you know, that somebody circulated in the group, obviously about the chemicals that they add into the children's food. And so I know this is true because I've seen aspartic acid or aspartame in food products for children, et cetera, et cetera. And they talked about all of the heavy metals and stuff the other day. And so I'm not even trusting these food additives that they're putting in the food and even the name brands because I saw it circulating and then I was some of the name brands are so established, you know, it frightened me.
Yeah.
You know, and
I saw an article with it's a Simply Natural, one of those drinks that's supposed to be like just pure juice or something like that.
Yeah, but Dr. D,
and it was saying that they found
why
toxins.
Why are the people allowed to get away with this?
Toxins inside of it. So I mean, it's really difficult today because you go in the food store and everything is basically like 75% or more of the food store is just like packaged goods, maybe 85%.
Yeah, but I realized, but something you said, it triggered something that I learned. And so even as I consume fruits, except the kiwi and, you know, those ones that you kind of can consume the skin with it, I try to consume the skin with the food. So that I could reduce the sugar absorption, like you say. So I kind of linked that to what I learned. So, you know what I mean? Because I have a nutritional prescription healing book for about 30-something years. And I just had the revised edition. This is what I do. But I'm afraid that, you know, all right, like, let's say, you know, I'm self-employed, right, really. And so what I did was I have some money for national insurance. And I was deciding that I would pay them. But now I look like, you know, the thing is, it robs you of the one thing to the next. I mean, I didn't sign up for the NIH. I don't have, I have life insurance, and I don't have health insurance. And so it's very difficult when you have money. But you cannot get the service to the hospital with the dates and, mm-hmm. and the government don't realize that, you know, I pay in taxes and it's like nothing there for me. So, you know, I was thinking about going Cuba or doing, I really don't want to go Cuba because it's just anything could happen if I fly on the plane. But I'm showing you that now I have money to pay national insurance, but I'm thinking about just spending my money to go do this, bitch, and it doesn't pan out. You're not getting anything in return. But as far as the bowel movements and peristalsis, and I'm not bragging, but I'm 58. I'm like, I wouldn't go anywhere in the morning because within minutes of me getting up, I'm ready to use the bathroom. And so by 12 o'clock, sometimes
you probably have yourself trained that way. That's what you
I,
just
I don't
do
know, but I mean, I consume a lot of fiber. And so what happens is, you know, it's normal like 3 times a day, or basically when I eat, even in the evening times, like within minutes, or like let's say within a half an hour to 5 minutes, you get the peristalsis when I go. That's a movement. And so I can't see how people could be putting in 3 meals a day and satisfied with even one particular movement a day, unless, you know, it's maybe 10 pounds, but they're putting out a 15 pounds. But most people don't even realize the amount of undigested fecal matter that remains in them.
Mm.
And so, you know, I'm glad I'm very flat in the stomach here, but, you know, it doesn't. And the doctor told me, I saw a weird thing. He's denying diabetes. He's denying constipation. I was wondering why she write that, but say, come like everybody constipated. Why? I mean, that's what she up there, but I read it. And I was supposed to go catch that. Which, why she put that? They come like everybody's diabetic and everybody has this problem.
Well, that's just how some, especially this English trained and the use of these electric medical records, that's how they write it. So I wouldn't take that.
Doctor,
how
long you think I get lost before the surgery? It's really, and it's kind of depressing.
You
and
know,
they feel like,
it's so crazy right now.
I got to see Robbie. I may get an appointment to see Robbie, but it's worse than the first one because the first one it wasn't that big, but this one is more closer to the genitalia, and it's really
a groinal hernia.
Yeah, and so I could see that it's different and it's causing.
Did you ask him if there was anything, like any kind of strap or anything that you could wear to
I've already gotten the truss, you know. And, you know, I'm well knowledgeable, but I'm able to push it back in. It's able to move. It's not strangulated, but, you know, I'm doing all the right things to try and keep, you know. But the thing is, I'm disappointed in the time and the reality, you know, just sitting, but something basically, I don't want to end up on a table and there's any emergencies. I have to deal with it. But it's just saying something as simple as that. You know, it should be.
You have to be careful because we are moving.
Healthy, so working,
people need to let their leaders know, their government know that they're not interested in, you know, just having this really socialized way of medicine, because that's where it's going to be waiting. What you need is access to healthcare in various ways that you can afford. They have to be able to do that. So, you know, having the parallels where not everything is so expensive, but you're able to get.
Yeah, but I mean, what I'm saying is eventually they joke and I just take the money and go let someone else do it. But what I'm saying is it's cash money. And I mean, I didn't even have a problem with paying the hospital. You know, when you go there, you pay for your bed, you pay for this, you pay for that. But most people want it free. But what I'm saying is there's no services, but it's not an actual fact.
Yeah,
I have children.
So
And then on top of that, doctor.
Really?
That's not like that's what I have to do. You know what I mean? But what I'm saying is, the thing is, my fiance lost her job because she refused the COVID-19 vaccine. So this is all different type of paradigms that they've created to make it more hard
on
people who really.
I totally agree. Our public services need to be there because it really is our safety net, and people do need to have that because we don't know what stages of life we're going to be in and what we're going
to
go through.
But not only that, I'm not into these people. I mean, you know, my fiance brought in a substantial amount of money. She's unemployed now, and the thing is, I'm flying on one wing. I don't have a problem with that, but was doing it for a while. Like during the pandemic, and you know, understand me what I'm saying?
And you see
the price on the food, but you know what I'm saying? So it's not like, you know, I'm in this type of, you know, but it's just that.
No, that's what is really more like a social net rather than a constant thing, because there's always a time in different people's lives when you're going to need to have those resources there, and they should be there. They should be there. I totally agree.
Yeah, you know, I get some money. I get the money sitting there. But, you know, the thing is, Dr. D, I'll check Robbie and try to see if I can get it done. But the thing is, the hospital isn't serving me any purpose. Paying taxes isn't serving me any purpose. If every time something happened to me, I got to go have a cookout or grab a couple of grand here to do this and that. And nobody has, you know what I mean? It's really, you know, the money which you have really basically is for your children. I'm not living this high. I'm living frugal. I don't try to, you know what I mean? I think about my children. I don't even buy a bunch of things one time knowing that at this age anything could happen. I'm not going to heaven with these material things that I'm buying. So I have a young son. I wanted you to see him, you know, because I tell you, everybody sees him, you know.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and so I look at him. He's already started to speak.
You need to sign up for NHI. You need to give us a call anyway.
Bless
give us a call. You say you haven't signed up, so you should do that. But for your son, I'd love to meet him.
All right, thank you. All right,
yes. So I totally agree. I mean, we've got to get all this stuff together, and we need to have things in place. And I think at this point, we need to look at parallel ways of dealing with healthcare because there seems to be an extraordinary burden on the public healthcare system. And if we're not going to do things differently, and I'm just going to sidetrack, you know, like if I was running healthcare, I think the difference between a practicing doctor who's involved, various maybe other persons who are just like in these positions, is you kind of know what's going on. So I would take definitely a different approach. Caller, you're on the air. We have a few more minutes.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
First time caller. I listen to your show occasionally. I listened last week and again. And the gentleman who just phoned in, he tends to call quite a few talk shows, and I always really enjoy his commentary. He really provides a lot of good commentary and very insightful. But the reason why I was pushed to call tonight is because, you know, I've had it up to my neck with insurance companies and doctors. I don't know who's running the greater scam or the greater fraud here. I mean, I really am not being flippant. I'm really serious here because, you know, I pay a significant amount each month for insurance, right? And then you go to the doctor and you are told, okay, well, this is your copay, which is 20% of, supposed to be 20% of the bill. And then today at some point, I receive an email from one of my doctor's offices. I had some issues last year, towards the end of last year, October, November, December, that required me to go back and forth to a particular doctor quite a few times. And I get an email from the finance department today to say that I have an overage of $650 that I have to settle. And I'm like, excuse me, but explain this to me. So, of course, now I'm on the phone with the finance department, and the young lady, her English is not her first language, so she's giving me, and I'm trying to understand her, and she's not really being clear to me. And I'm mad now because I'm already, I just got an email from you to say I owe $650, but why you didn't even send me a statement of account to support the fact that I owe you $650? Of course, I think
this sounds like a particular institution. I'm not going to call their name, but I know they one particular group does this all the time.
So I say to them, look, you can't just send an email to say, oh, you $650 when you've not even attached a statement of account. I need the EOB, the insurance company, to show what was paid and what wasn't paid. A very long, very painful conversation with the finance department. I was told that when you visit the doctor, even though you might be charged a 20% copay, that doesn't mean that the full 80% is going to be paid by the insurance company. The insurance company may refuse to pay a certain amount. So why is it that they're going to refuse a certain amount if that is my plan? I go to a specialist doctor. My copay at the specialist doctor is $50. Why is it? Now, I can see if I'm having a procedure. I'm not talking about procedures now. I'm talking about just the cost of the visit. Just the visit, the doctor's visit fee, right? That's what I'm talking about. So you're telling me now, okay, so my specialist visit copay is $50. So why is it then that you're telling me that, oh, the insurance company only paid, say the doctor's visit is $280. I didn't pay $50. The insurance company paid when I saw the doctor. Now they sent a bill back. They said to my provider, my doctor's office, that, oh, we're only paying $150 for this visit. So the balance of it, you got to get from the patient. But how is this possible? Like, Why is it that the doctors are overcharging an amount that the insurance companies are not willing to pay? This is my question. And also, to I'm just asking, how does it work? Because I am just baffled. Right. I don't understand how it works.
Right. I don't know. It's kind of a lot of the time it's like the insurance company and their little policies that they have in there. And so they will. So you need to read whatever policy you have with fine print. And
my
even
policy,
sometimes
inside
talk,
out.
Talk,
inside
yeah,
out.
Talk,
I know
talk
my
to them before they go. So what happens is, first of all, the doctor will put in a claim.
Correct.
And they'll go on the basis of what the insurance company says, you know, which will be like really brief, like the $50 copay. So they'll put in their thing, and then, but they don't tell the doctor what amounts that they will accept. They allow the doctor to charge whatever the doctor's fee is. So if the doctor's fee is $500, that's their thing. But they won't say, we won't pay $500. What they'll say is, it's a $50 copay. Now, when it goes to the insurance company have their own people who know all the little fine print and stuff from their side, because, you know, the doctor doesn't know what the insurance company sometimes is willing to pay or not for something. They will say, well, we have a built-in estimate of what we think this should cost.
Correct.
And we've decided that this only costs, we're only willing to say that this is worth $300. So, if your doctor charged you $500,
has charged $200 over on
well, it's not really what you call an overcharge, because that doctor might bill insurance company C that same price, and insurance company C says that's fine.
Yeah,
you see what I'm saying to you? So
I understand, you as
a doctor, you will sign up with, let's say, four or five insurance companies. Each one of them has a different policy that they have, and they kind of like, I don't know, they like hold some of their pearls to themselves. So you might have your price, so you say, you know what, this is my set price, this is what I calculate that I think is a good price for me to be paid for this service. Insurance company A says, oh, that's a great price, we'll pay all of it. Insurance company B, so you're an insurance company A, you come to me with the same thing, I charge you the same price, you get everything covered. You come from insurance B, who says, well, we don't really see it like that. We've determined internally that we only pay. So that's $200 more than we're willing to pay. And the patient now has to pay. Now, the doctor doesn't know all their little pricing things and how they have all their stuff set up. They just have a general kind of guideline of what they need to do. And so they got their full payment from insurer A, but insurer B, that's not what they're into. And so what does he do? Does he switch his price for each one, or does he just have a price across the board and it's depending on your insurance? So sadly, that's how it works. Most times you won't know until they come back to you and say, well, you know, we actually have this amount. They won't even say the number. We'll just say, no, that's over what we're willing to pay and we're not going to pay it. You have to go and collect it.
And that's the explanation, but I'm just trying to understand if you're paying a certain amount in a premium and your insurance is 80-20, why is it that you're telling me that I'm not covered for the full company's not
the technicality of it is this 80-20 based on what they're willing to pay.
Correct. That's exactly what it is. But I mean, it's like I have to shop around doctors.
I know certain insurance companies, when I put in my claim can be paid. And I know other insurance companies, when I put in my claim, I have to hope and I have to pray. And I hate calling patients back. And I know with certain insurance companies, I have to hope and I have to pray. I know they're not going to have a problem. And if there's a problem, they're going to send me a little note, Dr. Archer, whatever like that. And some of them, I got to wait. And sometimes, too, you don't get it back at the same time. Certain people
have their
system set up where within me putting in the claim, I have an idea that my claim is going to be paid. Some people, they make you wait, wonder, and try to figure out. So it's really the systems inside the companies.
It's very frustrating. I have to shop around for doctors. I have to now start calling to say, well, which doctor can I get this service done for this amount so that my insurance covers
the amount
of my
80%? Well, no, I think a good idea is, like, if you're going to do something and you find out it's going to cost X amount. Call your insurance company because they're going to be a lot more open with you than they're going to be with us, right? They're just going to tell us, put in your claim because they don't want to give you an indication of what they want to pay. They're not going to do that for us. They're going to be like, oh, put in your claim. They leave it up to you. That's, and they're going to say, Dr. Archer charged you X, right? That's not our business. But internally, we only willing to pay Y. I don't know why they won't tell you that, but that's what they do. I guess they feel it's because some doctors are going to charge less and then they're going to get away with not having to pay anymore. And so they don't release that information. But you, as the person paying, you can go and having X done with Dr. Archer on Thursday. I have an idea that it's going to cost me. So am I completely covered for that? You can actually do that. You have a better chance of doing that because you have the power. It is your policy. But if you just go and use it like that, because I know a certain thing, I had a baby about over a year ago, and we were told we paid everything, everything looks beautiful. And then like 6 months later, I got this call saying, oh, well, you know, X, Y, and Z. And I was like, what? And don't worry, I'm just like you. I get upset and I care about it.
And I mean, I go line by line, you know, and I know my policy and I'm, you know, and of course, the first thing they say is over and above the customary charges. You know, and I'm like, boy, that's really a lie now. I just don't understand it. It's like,
And see, that varies because you will go to another insurance company and the other insurance company will say that charge was fine. But you go to another company and they say, no, we didn't take that. And then it's not the same for each card to shop around because then you might have another problem, which they're willing to pay an exorbitant amount for, whereas the other guys are not. So it's kind of tricky. I wish it was a lot more clear, but you as the person have a lot more power than even the doctor in that situation.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate. Anyway, we're switching gears. I know you have to go soon, but I knew you were discussing digestive issues, I think last week and this week as well. And, you know, I had an issue last year with a digestive issue that was very peculiar to unusual. It's not as common as as other digestive issues or gastro issues. And my gastroenterologist, after having done colonoscopy, endoscopy, what have you, and he ended up diagnosing me with bile acid malabsorption, which apparently is only something that happens very commonly with those persons who've had their gallbladder, but I've never had my gallbladder removed. My gallbladder is still in my body. So it turned out that I was to the point, doctor, where I could not eat anything without having to go to the bathroom immediately after I ate. That was a constant. That was a constant. No matter what I consumed, it came right back out. And I wasn't getting any nutrients from food. It was very bad for at least a 3 month period, and I went through all sorts of different tests. But anyway, so he finally diagnosed me with having BAM, and he's put me on some medication to try and regulate that. But it looks as if I'll probably have to be on the meds long term. But it just goes to show that there's just so many things out there that I've never heard of BAM before I was diagnosed with it. It's not very common, but it just, and I have my gallbladder, so it's even more uncommon that I have it, I don't know. It wasn't something that you had mentioned in your dialogues. I just wanted to highlight and remind doctors that GPs that there are all sorts of other little things that are going on with digestive issues that we don't really know a lot about.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you in reaching out and calling and being a first-time caller with us. We hope you call again. And I'm glad that you got some help for the issue that you're having. But take a deep breath. We all struggle with the insurance and everything like that. But be good consumers. Keep their feet to the questions that you need. And, ask your doctor ahead of time what it's going to look like. But sometimes it's hard even for us to kind of navigate that space. So thank you for calling. Yes, we went over a little bit. I'm glad that we took that call. And I hope you feel a little bit better. Sometimes you've got to get all of that out. And we'll see you all next week on The Doctor Is In with me, Dr. Dinotra Archer, brought to you by Medical Concierge Services. I wish you all a good night.